It's time for Rush Hour with Danny Burke, presented by Bet Rivers.
Hello, everybody, and welcome in to a Friday edition of Rush Hour presented by Bet Rivers. I'm Danny Burke, your host, and we are doing it live out of the Bet Rivers Sportsbook right here in Des Plaines, Illinois, just outside of Chicago. And tonight, we got a great one planned for you. Yes, it's round two of the Masters, so we'll give an update on some of the picks we had. Not looking too great, but we have one that's looking okay, so hopefully we can, you know, keep rolling with the one player. And we'll discuss that in a second, but we'll get deeper into the Masters, just kind of get a different perspective and a different opportunity potentially to play some more bets with Trey Wingo. That's right, does a great job covering the sport of golf and many others, has a great YouTube channel as well, so we'll kind of get some of his thoughts when it comes to the links and if he's been shocked by any of the performances at Augusta thus far and what to expect for the next 2 days. Looks like weather could be an issue tomorrow with a little bit of rain, so we'll see what kind of factor that could play to each specific player toward the top, at least. So very excited to talk with Trey about the Masters. And then after that, we'll go through a couple bets that I have. And we have one in Major League Baseball and in the NBA, one pertaining to the Bulls and a prop. And then in terms of baseball, not only will I give my play, but we'll talk with Jeff Erickson. We've had him on the show plenty of times. And since it's the start of the Major League Baseball season, one of the best guys to talk about the sport with. This fantastic work as a senior editor over at RotoWire. So we'll kind of get an update in the very beginning stages of this season, see what kind of plays he likes tonight and what trends to look forward to this early on in Major League Baseball. So a lot to unfold tonight on the program. But speaking of the Masters, like we are already alluding to, let's kind of give you an update on the situation and see who's at the top and where their odds are currently residing. Because as we know, yesterday it was the Justin Rose show, right? And, you know, he's still at the top of the leaderboard right now, 7-under. Round two, he went even, so he's still there. That's what he finished yesterday. And you see him at about plus 550 for his odds to win the Masters. Now, yesterday he was as low as, what, about plus 320, somewhere around 3-1. And basically, what we were saying here on the program was, you know, it's way too early to be judging. Even though it was a four-stroke lead, after round one with those short of odds, no reason why you should be pulling the trigger on that early on. Now, it's not to say that he still can't finish this out and keep up a healthy lead and win the thing, but look, I mean, you're getting better value at this point. And naturally so. I mean, you know, he had an okay day today, but didn't improve on yesterday, and then the competition caught up. So this is an opportunity to look elsewhere too, potentially, because now you got Spieth, who was a guy touted very highly coming into this tournament, coming in hot, and he's at about 3-1. Now, he's the presumed favorite, I mean, just based off the odds as we're seeing. So, you know, it's been interesting to see what Spieth could do today. He was 4-under, and now you're getting him, like we said, at 4-1. Then he gets Zalatoris. He's at 10-1, and he's 6-under as of this point. And the list just keeps going on and on. As we know, Harmon had a good performance yesterday, too. So he's been sticking up there consistently himself. You could get him at about 14-1. So we'll see if that's a guy worth putting a little bit of cash on there, potentially, with Trey Wingo when we talk with him. And then Tony Finau, 14-1. He's about 4-under right now, a guy who's typically in the mix. You could maybe rely on a little bit more so. But, again, we're not going to go through everybody on the list. Just wanted to give you an update right now. And speaking of which, we'll kind of give us a brief update of the bets that we had heading into the tournament. And because, like I said, we have one guy that's really looking solid for us right now, which is Cameron Smith. But that just gives us a better opportunity to look at different angles now that we're almost about halfway through. But again, the three bets that we had, what it consisted of was three players to finish in the top 20. Brooks Koepka was one of those guys at plus 110. Now, obviously, we were aware of the concerns with Koepka and his knee surgery and how that may affect him. But as we were talking to Wes Reynolds about this, you know, I mean, Brooks, as good as he is, there, and like, you kind of put aside the knee problem for a second, right? Because this is once in a very rare chance that you could get solid value on Brooks all around. So it was more that you know the firepower he's capable of having. You probably aren't going to get this better best of a number than he is right now. So it was just a solid opportunity. And, you know, it's a hit or miss with him because we didn't know how the surgery was going to end up and how that was going to affect him. But obviously he hasn't been doing too good. He was 3-over today. He's 5-over overall throughout two rounds. So not looking too great for Koepka. But again, then with Cameron Smith, he's been doing pretty good. Plus 150. Finishing the top 20 is what we have with Smith. He went 4-under today. Now he's 2-under overall, so Smith is looking pretty solid to this point. Adam Scott had a decent day yesterday, but today Not too great. He's 1 over, 3 over overall. We had him at 2-1 to finish in the top 20. Still some hope potentially with Scott, but at the end of the day, Cameron Smith's our guy that we're banking on right now with the odds of plus 150 to finish in the top 20. Once again, the show is Rush Hour, presented by Bet Rivers. I'm Danny Burke, your host, and we're live out of the Bet Rivers Sportsbook just outside of Chicago in Des Plaines, Illinois, to be exact. Plenty of Masters coverage coming your way. Trey Wingo, who does a fantastic job covering golf and hitting the links. We'll get his thoughts on the updated odds and tournament looking into Saturday and Sunday. Plus, we'll hit the MLB slate with Jeff Erickson, senior editor over at RotoWire. We'll get some of his plays and really just his overall thought this early in the season, see if there's any significant trends worth noting out as at this point to keep in mind when you're handicapping on the diamond. But speaking of handicapping, we've been on a nice little streak here. Had a nice winner in hockey last night, and now we have 11 consecutive winners on the ice. No hockey plays tonight, unfortunately, but where we do have a couple of plays, we have one in the NBA and one in baseball. So let's get to it, and we'll rehash it a little bit later on. But a play that I liked in terms of the NBA, Patrick Williams and his points prop, was a bet that I wanted to get into. 8.5 is where we're seeing his prop at. Shaded to the over minus 134 currently is where you're seeing it at about at Bet Rivers. Unders plus 105. I was able to find the over at about minus 125 or so earlier today. But really, Patrick Williams, I mean, a guy that we've talked about but haven't pulled the trigger on, but I did go over on him tonight because, look, he's averaging about 10 per game this season. He's gone over it in 29 out of 49 contests. More importantly, he's gone over 8.5 in the last 5 out of 6 games. Now, they last played the Hawks in the first game of the season, and that was his debut, obviously, as a rookie, and he dropped 16 points. It's a favorable matchup for him because 40% of his shots come from mid-range and 35% within 4 feet of the bucket at the rim. He's making 42% from mid-range and 66% at the rim. In Atlanta, they're allowing opponents to shoot 43% from mid-range. Bottom half, 21st is where that ranks them, and 63% at the rim, which is 10th, so not terrible, but they allow opponents to get their most attempts at the rim. 35% of their attempts are coming within 4 feet of the bucket, which ranks 20th. So the opportunities are going to be there for Patrick Williams because of the acquisitions of the new players. That really hasn't stopped his production. Again, he's gone over this mark in the last 5 out of 6 games. It's really just opened the floor for him and created more opportunities. Atlanta's also banged up with some of their big men, as we know, with DeAndre Hunter and also with John Collins. It looks like Capella and Gallinari are going to be good to go today. But again, I think it's a good spot for Patrick Williams. So look for Williams over 8.5 tonight in Atlanta. And then really quick, again, you know, we'll hit this one later on in the show, but I'll just give you a brief preview of it now. The Diamondbacks and the Reds dueling it out in Arizona. I played the Reds in this game. Look, Cincinnati's hot right now, and that was a big question mark with this team. What was their offense going to be? And they've been absolutely on a tear offensively. They're leading baseball in batting average at .316, slugging percentage .602. Over 1,000 OPS. So, look, 14 home runs, 54 RBIs. This team is doing really well right now. Arizona, conversely, on a 2-game losing streak. They're coming off a loss last night at Colorado, 7-3. Molly's taking the bump for Cincinnati, and he had a pretty good debut. An xFIP of 2.21, and he only allowed a few runs. I think 2 earned runs, 3 altogether. But, look, Molly's been a pretty reliant pitcher throughout most of his career and tenure with the Reds. You're getting Widener going for Arizona, who had a nice debut himself, but I don't think that's going to be replicated in this spot. I'm riding the hot bat of the Reds. I laid about minus 141. The steam continues to go to Cincinnati. About minus 155 is what we're seeing, but I got it a little bit earlier with the Reds, and if you don't want to lay the minus 155, of course, with the run line, you could get about plus 104 if you want to lay the run and a half. Well, let's go ahead and get back to the Masters because it is exciting times here in the month of April. And we're going to talk to a man who's very familiar with the links, and that's Trey Wingo, who did a great job. You've seen him PGA Tour Live as a golf analyst. And also you can catch his YouTube channel and his podcast with a half-forgotten history. And, you know, Trey, it's been a very fascinating tournament up to this point. Justin Rose obviously made a lot of noise on day one, and he stood pat into day two. And now the competition's catching up. What's been your thought of the tournament as of this point?
Well, good evening or good afternoon, and it's great to be with you. Great to hear from the guys at BSIN. It's been fun. Like, it's been pretty clear to me that after the scoring record that was set by Dustin Johnson in November, when the course was very soft and they had a lot of rain and they weren't sure how to prepare the golf course for a November tournament, that the people in charge of the Masters wanted to make sure okay, let's remind people that this place is supposed to be tough. And that was the course set up on Thursday, for sure. And we saw a lot of ridiculous scores. I think the pin placements were a little better today, and we've seen better scoring today. But this is what you want. Like, you look at this leaderboard right now. We're talking about Justin Rose at 7, Will Zalatoris trying to win for the first time at the Masters since Fuzzy Zeller did it in 79, I believe. Jordan Spieth, Justin Thomas, Hideki Matsuyama, Tony Finau, Siwoo Kim, Cameron Champ, all at 4 under par. I mean, I'd sign up for this 100 times out of 100.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, Trey, we, of course, give out a lot of the picks. We have a show, Long Shots, where we have some experts giving out some of their players. And some of the top guys that a lot of people touted were naturally Jordan Spieth, because he's had the hot hand as of late. And now he's the odds-on favorite at 4-1 to win the Masters. And Rose, obviously, up there as well, plus 550. But who are some of the guys you touted as being the top of the leaderboard? And are some of them still in play? And would you consider them a viable option heading into the second half of this tournament?
Yeah, Spieth is interesting, right, because he won last week, and that's only happened 4 times in Masters history where we've had a guy win the week before the Masters and then win the Masters. And the last Texan to do it was Ralph Goldahl, who did it in the 30s. So we're talking about a long possibility there because of what's happened. But Jordan, his first 3 years at the Masters, the first 3 years he played as a professional, he went 2-1-2. So obviously he knows the course very well. I had 5 guys that I really felt strongly about coming in. Dustin Johnson, the Masters champion. Obviously, that's not going to happen. He missed the cut. Bryson, who fought it back today and shot a 67 to get to 1 under par. But the other three that I was considering were Justin Thomas and Tony Finau. And they're right there, you know. They're right there. And I know Finau, people are like, well, he hasn't won in 5 years. He's a money-making machine. Like, he has 37 top 10s since his last win 5 years ago and 20 top fives. He just hasn't found a way to sort of get over the finish line, but he is an exceptional player and can make birdies in bunches. And eventually, when we get to the back nine on Sunday, that's going to have to happen. But right now, my guy going into the week was Justin Thomas, and I have no reason to believe that that's going to change. At this point, I just think that he's in complete command of his game. He brought it back incredibly today, and he's got a little fire in him that I think all the great players have to have. Like, he's like, for example, like, he and Jordan are best friends, right? They grew up playing golf together. Jordan's a nice guy. Justin isn't the nicest of guys, and I like that about him. Like, you know, he plays golf the way people play football or basketball, and I respect that. He's got an ornery side to him, and that's why I think when push comes to shove, I think when it's all said and done, he may be the last man standing.
Yeah, Justin Thomas, 4 under, and he's at about plus 550 for his odds. And Finau, who you alluded to as well, some good value with him at 14-1. And Trey, you know, obviously, since we're pretty much at the halfway point of this tournament, I mean, take a guy like Justin Rose, for example, who jumped out to a huge lead to begin the tournament. I mean, what's the mentality like for a guy that was up so early on, knowing you have 3 days ahead of you, and obviously now you have 2 days ahead of you? How does that affect some of these players mentally?
Well, it is. And that's what you just said. That last word was critical, mentally. This game is so mental, and the way you play the Masters is so mental. Justin Rose was asked after his round of even par today, you know, how did that happen? And he said, because it's the Masters, and because the Masters happened. And he knows that. I mean, he's a guy that's been through the gauntlet and won the U.S. Open at Marion in 2013. I think he has the fortitude to do it. I really do. But it is going to be a mental strain. You mentioned the podcast. We talked to Trevor Immelman, the 2008 Masters champion on Half Forgotten History, and he led every single day. And he told me one thing, which is really interesting. Like, it didn't really affect him until he realized he was going into the lead Sunday morning, and Saturday night he got a call from Gary Player, a fellow South African. And he said, Gary really sobered me up. He was like, Trevor, you're playing great. We want you to do well, but understand tomorrow is going to be different. It's going to be a different beast, a different animal, and you're going to be faced with adversity, and you're going to have to decide whether or not you're going to be able to overcome that adversity. And Trevor was like, whoa, that just hit me like a ton of bricks. Like, I understood the situation, but when Gary Player, a three-time Masters champion, called me and said, "You're going to be through the gauntlet tomorrow," it really sort of, you know, shook him a little bit, but it made him understand the importance of the moment, and it might be his best, and it turns out to be, it was, his only chance to win a major. So the mental part of it is just as important as anything else, and I think that's the part that's going to be interesting about all these players going forward. How are they going to approach it mentally, knowing what they need to do? And look, we know they set the course up differently on every day, but they're going to set up the back nine on Sunday for birdies. They want that. They want the possibility of a birdie at 13, 15, 16, 17, the way those holes are traditionally set up. So you're going to have to withstand that. You sort of grind your way through the front nine on Sunday at Augusta and then find a way to make a few birdies coming home on the back nine, and that usually determines who wears the green jacket.
Trey, and you know, you talk about looking ahead. I mean, Sunday, obviously the most important day, but tomorrow could be intriguing in the sense that weather could be a factor. Now, you've heard some players talk about how different it was from Augusta playing in the fall to the spring and how that's a completely different beast, at least for the guys being here their first time in the spring. How do you think the weather will impact some of these players, if at all, tomorrow?
Well, it's going to slow down play. There's no question about it. Based on the weather forecast, I'm not sure if we're going to finish. And that always makes it difficult. But when rain comes, most players welcome that because they know that at some point that's going to soften up the golf course. There was a little bit more moisture on the golf course today, and that clearly was an indication of why we had so many other players play rounds in the 60s as opposed to on Thursday. So when you get a little bit of moisture on the golf course, yes, it's going to delay things, but it also makes things, quite frankly, a little easier for the players because depending on how much rain comes, it gives them an opportunity to fire at a flag more often than if it's dry and windy, and you have to guess how much that ball is going to roll out as opposed to knowing it's a little softer and more receptive. So from the mental perspective, potential weather delays and a long day will be difficult, but if there's a significant amount of rain, from a ball striking perspective, it may make the course a little bit longer. But the defense of Augusta is the greens. And the idea of those being a little more receptive with more moisture, I think, is something that most players would sign up for.
Trey, we got a few minutes left, but you know, I just want to talk about Rory really quick because he was a guy that obviously was kind of struggling coming into this. And, you know, unfortunately, it didn't get much better for him. You know, what's the future outlook for Rory heading into upcoming tournaments? I mean, are we still high on him? Is it just kind of a process? What do you think it's going to be like for Rory in the future?
Well, he hasn't won a major since 2014 when he won the last two of that year. He won the Open Championship at Hoylake and then came from behind to get Phil Mickelson at Valhalla. It's weird. Much in the same way, if you would have told me, name the one major you are certain of that Phil Mickelson was going to win, I would have said the U.S. Open. He's won them all except the U.S. Open and has come in second place, a historic record number of times. I think five or six second place finishes at the U.S. Open. Rory's game is tailor-made for Augusta. And yet it's been 10 years now since he stood on the 10th tee at 2011 and hooked a ball, a tee shot so far to the left, it went to a place I'd never seen on the golf course before. And sort of fell apart. But then, you know, he came back the very next major at the U.S. Open at Congressional and set the record at 18 under par. So Rory and his inability to find his way at Augusta is just as flummoxing to me as Phil not having a U.S. Open victory. I can't explain it. Like, he's the best, to me, he's the best driver of the golf ball there is. And if his irons and putter are working, then he should win every week. But it's just been a real problem for him. Like, we saw him at the match play in Austin. Like, he drove one into a pool on a house left of the golf course. I mean, that's how crazy his driver has been. I wish I could explain to you or give you a reason why Rory has struggled at Augusta, but I can't, because everything about his game suggests he should have multiple green jackets at this point.
Yeah, one of those odd things that has been happening in golf as of late. And speaking of odd things, Trey, we got about 30 seconds, but if you broke your putter in the middle of a tournament, would you be going with your wedge or your three wood? I know they were talking about that on the broadcast earlier today, so I had to ask.
Yeah, Siwoo Kim, how about that? Look, I would never use the wedge because then you're trying to blade everything, and that just sounds like a disaster. I would have used a three wood or a hybrid because at least it gives me some sort of natural flat face of the club to try and get the ball rolling. So kudos to Kim for finding a way to get it done with a three wood. I might have taken a hybrid, but there's a little more loft in the hybrid, but either one of those to me would have been a better option than the blade of the wedge, because if you blade that thing the wrong way, that putt's going to go about 40 yards.
Yep. I'm right there with you, Trey. Hey, we really appreciate the time. Enjoy the rest of the tournament, and we'll be rooting in Justin Thomas for you.
Thanks, man. We appreciate it. Always great to be with you guys.
You bet. There he is, Trey Wingo. You can give him a follow on Twitter at Wingos, and obviously does great work PGA Tour Live as an analyst and catches YouTube channel and podcast. Have Forgotten History brings on a plethora of guests. Does great work all around covering so many different sports. Really appreciate him taking some time to talk about the Masters. We're about the end of round two here. We'll be looking forward to Saturday and Sunday. Of course, we'll have you covered tomorrow on VCB Sports Betting Network. All the guys will have you updated with those odds and what have you. Not only tomorrow, but Sunday as well. But as for us here on Rush Hour, coming up next, let's go to the NFL. Some more draft props that could be a good look this early on with some of that value. What are the Bengals going to do? What are the Dolphins going to do with the receiver that we're assuming they're going to pick? We'll discuss next right here on VCB. Exclusive bets, daily specials, odds boosts, and the largest offer of live in-play options. BetRivers Sportsbook is the industry leader when it comes to online sports betting. And to make your experience even more rewarding, BetRivers offers the most live streams of major sports, instant payouts, and only one-time playthrough. BetRivers, your hometown sportsbook. Offer valid in Colorado, Iowa, Illinois, Indiana, Virginia, Michigan, and Pennsylvania. Available at PlaySugarHouse.com in New Jersey. Must be 21. Gambling problem. Illinois, New Jersey, Pennsylvania. Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Indiana, 1-800-9-WITH-IT. Colorado, 1-800-522-4700. Michigan, 1-800-270-7117. 1-888-532-3500 in Virginia. Iowa, call 1-800-BETS-OFF. Back at it here on Rush Hour on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. We're live out of the BetRivers Sportsbook. I'm Danny Burke, your host. You can follow me on Twitter at Danny Burke 5. You can follow VSiN, the Sports Betting Network, on the tweets at VSiN Live. Big thanks to Trey Wingo for hopping on to discuss the Masters. He'll be sweating out Justin Thomas. And speaking of the Masters, you get a 20% live boost every day that you bet on the Masters. So good in-play opportunities, as we were just discussing with Trey. So 20% profit boost, just head to betrivers.com. All right, well, we were talking Masters, we hit baseball and NBA a little bit before, and we'll continue that later on, but like we've been doing these past few days, we're keeping up with our conversation with the NFL draft, because it's a very profitable area to bet in, especially with some of these unique angles and the preconceived notions and knowledge that you already know. It can give you a better opportunity as a bettor. But one that stuck out to me today, we've talked about Kyle Pitts a lot and Sewell and where they're going to end up, but what about some of these wide receivers? Because Pitts, you know, technically a tight end. So what about the first wide receiver to be drafted? Well, it's not too enticing in the sense that Ja'Marr Chase is a big favorite, minus $4. Devonta Smith, he's 5-1 along with Jaylen Waddle. Then you get Rashad Bateman out of Minnesota at 30-1. Marshall Jr., 40-1. And Rondale Moore out of Purdue at 50-1. So, look, I mean, the only thing I would bet here would probably be Smith at 5-1. But again, you know, with something this chalky, I'm not going to really touch it at all. But that got me thinking, I mean, what are the Dolphins going to do with the sixth pick? Because presumably it's going to be a wide receiver, right? But, you know, the big question mark is what's going to happen 4, 5, and 6, being the Falcons. And then you get the Bengals and then the Dolphins. So what about the draft position for Ja'Marr Chase and Devonta Smith? Well, Chase is at 6.5. The over's plus 108. The under is minus 134. Smith is at 11.5 over minus 104, under minus 121. Beginning with Chase, this comes down to what the Bengals are going to do, correct? Because we've talked about the Falcons, and I think Kyle Pitts is going to go to Atlanta, barring a trade, and they opt out of the fourth pick and swap it with someone else. But if the Atlanta Falcons are going to be there, I wholeheartedly believe they're going to take Kyle Pitts. Now, that leaves the Bengals. What are the Bengals going to do? Because you lose A.J. Green, you need to replace him, but it's not like he was that dominant of a factor these past two seasons with injury and just really not as motivated, I guess, to go out there. I love A.J. Green, great player, but he just wasn't the same A.J. Green as we were accustomed to. So do they get someone to replace him? Maybe, maybe not, because you still have Boyd, you still have Higgins. But the thing is, yes, you can add Ja'Marr Chase here, who is a teammate, former teammate at LSU with Joe Burrow, so it makes sense. But he needs protection to get the to have time to be able to throw the ball to those guys. Personally, I think the biggest necessity for the Bengals is the offensive line. That's the reason that Joe Burrow didn't play the latter half of the season, because he got banged up, terrible injury, because of the bad offensive line. I think they should go with Sewell, and you would think that would make a little bit more sense, but there has been chatter because of the familiarity with Chase and just adding another offensive weapon. Zach Taylor would love that, so I get it. Like, that makes sense to get Chase. So that would put him under 6.5, obviously. But assuming they get an offensive lineman, then what's going to happen with the sixth pick? Do the Dolphins go with Ja'Marr Chase, as he's touted as being the top receiver, or do they go with the Heisman winner and Smith, because, again, of the familiarity with Tua and Smith from Alabama? That's kind of the interesting dilemma here. And then even after the Dolphins, you get the Lions, who are probably your last team that would snag a receiver. They got to replace Kenny Galladay. So basically, I guess what I'm saying here is, if the Cincinnati Bengals go with Sewell on the offensive lineman, do you think that the Dolphins are going to go with the familiarity with their quarterback and former teammate, or the top guy in Ja'Marr Chase? That's the big question. But, you know, I don't have as much conviction with Chase and his position at 6.5, but Devontae Smith under 11.5 minus 121, I think that would be a good look for this bet. Because, again, even if the Bengals do go with the offensive lineman and then the Dolphins get Chase, you still have the opportunity for the Lions to get Devontae Smith. And look, you know, the next person or next team, rather, to draft a receiver probably going to be the Eagles at 12, hence the number at 11.5. But again, I think Devontae Smith under 11.5 would be a good selection there. But a lot of this draft coming down to what the Bengals are going to do. So, of course, we'll discuss it further, get some experts on the show. Really excited to talk with Michael Lombardi further on throughout the month of April about the draft. But we'll switch it up next. Let's talk some basketball. Plenty of games to discuss here on Rush Hour. VSiN brings you the English Premier League Betcast for the match between Crystal Palace and Chelsea at 12:30 p.m. Eastern, presented by BetRivers Sportsbook. VSiN EPL Betcast is the best way to keep up with the soccer betting action live during the matches, so go ahead and join Nigel Seeley and Ari Samiyu as they talk betting during the biggest match of the weekend. And if you're new to in-play soccer betting, they'll show you the ropes and the smart plays of the day. So go ahead and check it out at VSiN.com/EPL. Tune in at 12:30 p.m. Eastern, Saturday afternoon. Once again, that's VSIN/EPL. It is VSiN, the Sports Betting Network, and the show is Rush Hour. We're live here at the BetRivers Sportsbook. I'm Danny Burke, your host. It's time to talk some NBA here. We briefly discussed it earlier with a play that I liked in the Bulls and Hawks game. And if you're curious about the spread, this is about to tip off in about a half hour now. The Bulls were about a two-point dog. For most of the day, we were awaiting the injury report based on Capella and Gallinari. Looks like those two are good to go. So now it's at 2.5 in favor of Atlanta. The Hawks minus 132 on the money line, plus 112 on the buyback for Chicago, who's on a three-game winning streak, looking to get their season-high four-game winning streak if they are to be victorious. Total at 225. Now, the Hawks are coming off a loss on Wednesday versus Memphis, 131-113. But again, remember, they were injured without Capella and Gallinari, and they're still missing John Collins and DeAndre Hunter, who won't be back for a little bit. So both of those big men going to be out in this game for Atlanta. The These teams have played once back on December 23rd. Hawks got the dub 124-104. That was opening night in the NBA. Bulls also 11-3 ATS, their last 14 games as a road underdog. Just to keep in mind for this matchup, I would lean toward taking the points with the Bulls, but aside from that, more conviction with the prop tonight, which we discussed at the beginning of the program. Patrick Williams over 8.5 points. He's gone over this mark in the last 5 out of 6 games. The additions of Vucevic, Tice, Brown and company, I mean, it really hasn't limited his opportunities. It's more so spread the floor open and created more shots for Patrick Williams. So I like him tonight to go over 8.5. He got 16 in that first matchup against Atlanta, which is favorable for him. Mid-range rim is where he thrives a little bit more so, and that's where Atlanta lacks defensively. So look for the rookie to go over 8.5 tonight. I laid minus 125, it's at about minus 134 now, but I would still certainly look the direction of over with Patrick Williams at 8.5. All right, let's look at this matchup between the 76ers and the Pelicans very briefly because, well, it looks like Philly opened as a 7.5-point favorite. However, the line has dropped now to 5.5. I believe Brandon Ingram is good to go in this game, hence why the line movement back in favor of the home team in New Orleans. They're also catching plus 185 is Zion Williamson and company. Minus 220 for the Sixers on the road. Total at 229. Philly's coming off the nice win at Boston that we cashed down on Tuesday, 106-96. Pelicans, though, they're losers of their last 4 out of 5. They got stomped by Brooklyn on Wednesday, 139-111. But remember, they were still missing a decent amount of their players. And, you know, they're still a little bit banged up all around. But Brandon Ingram, Zion, the two top guys are good to go. They can compete in any game. It's just this team has been incredibly volatile and so hard to trust that there's no chance I would be taking the points with the Pelicans. But 5.5 seems like it's in a good spot. I probably wouldn't touch it. The Sixers are 5-0-1 ATS their last 6 games as a road favorite. So really it would be Sixers or nothing for me. However, I would always probably consider even more so the in-game aspect. If the Pelicans keep it close, Philly gets off to a slow start, whatever it may be, then I would jump in on the Sixers. Hey, by the way, Embiid, 4-1 to win MVP, slowly dropping back down to one of the favorites in the discussion. Well, he's top 2 right now. I mean, Jokic is minus 177, but hey, Embiid hasn't missed a beat, it looks like. So if he wants to keep his campaign going, they're going to have to get some big wins, and tonight would be one of them on the road against the Pelicans. But all right, the final game we will look into, the Nuggets. Speaking of Jokic, he'll be taking on the Spurs once again. And the Nuggets, an 8-point favorite in the spot. Now, these teams did just play on Wednesday. Denver got the dub 106-96, brought the Spurs on to a 4-game losing streak now. And conversely for the Nuggets, they are on a 7-game winning streak, have not lost a game since the acquisition of Aaron Gordon at the trade deadline. Also, they played a little bit earlier this year in San Antonio, won on January 29th, 119-109. A little bit different look for the Spurs team that's dealt with a lot of adversity, injuries left and right, tough schedule to their second half of the season. They're 2-8 straight up and ATS in their last 10 games. Nuggets, 7-3 ATS in their last 10 games. Again, the spread at 8, it makes sense, but it seems like it's gotten a little bit too high. But you know, simultaneously, I don't trust the Spurs right now and the kind of the roller coaster mess they're in right now. 220.5 total, no real thoughts. It has moved from 218.5 up to 220.5, so the market's been trending toward the over. But instead of playing with the spread, because 8 seems like a little bit too much, as good as the Nuggets have been, I would still key in on the Nuggets, except I would look at a specific player. And who else but the potential MVP, Nikola Jokic? 24.5 is where we're seeing the big man's points prop tonight. Over, under, minus 113 each way. Now, Jokic is averaging 26 points per contest. He's gone over 24.5 in 26 out of 51 games. Plus, he's gone over it the last 2 games. And again, they've played San Antonio twice. So in that first matchup against the Spurs at the end of January, he dropped 35 points. In the second go-around, the other night, he dropped 25 points, 11 of 18 from the floor, 3 of 4 from the charity stripe, 25 points. He got over this prop mark in both contests against the Spurs. Can he do it again tonight? Well, you got to remember, the reason why he's so successful against San Antonio is because the Spurs are allowing opponents to get 30% of their shots up from mid-range, which ranks 14th. Okay, kind of middle of the pack. But of that 30%, 21% is from short mid-range specifically. So a little bit outside of the rim, and they're allowing opponents to shoot 43% from short mid-range. Now, Jokic thrives from mid-range. Over half of his shots are coming from there, but more specifically from short mid-range, he's making 57% of his shots from short mid-range, and that's where 37% of all of his mid-range shots are coming from. So I know I'm throwing a lot of numbers at you there, but long story short, this squad for the Spurs, they do not defend well when it comes to the short mid-range, and that's where Jokic gets his cake. And now, obviously, you lost a big man with Aldridge, but, you know, you got Poeltl there, and he does okay defensively, but he's no match for Jokic. The question here is, if the Nuggets get out to such a big lead, will Jokic be a factor late in the game? I mean, 8's a sizable spread here that it's indicated that the Nuggets will have control this game, but of course you never know. It's a familiar face, back-to-back with a day in between, but, you know, so Jokic at 24.5, if he can guarantee that he's going to play all four quarters, I do think he's going to go over this mark. But if it's going to be a game that gets away from San Antonio, it's hard to imagine that Jokic is going to be racking up the minutes. But nevertheless, if you're looking for a different angle in this spot, I think you look over 24.5 with the potential MVP in Nikola Jokic. All right, more looks in tonight's sporting world. We'll go to the MLB. Jeff Erickson, senior MLB editor, or senior editor overall, does the great work with MLB specifically. We'll discuss tonight's slate. I know we had a play with that Reds matchup. We'll discuss that a little bit later with Jeff and any trends that have stuck out to him this early on in the Major League Baseball season. So stick around as we wrap up a Friday edition of Rush Hour with some baseball chatter. For your winnings, cash out instantly with BetRivers' new feature, Rush Pay. Get your cash when you want it at BetRivers Sportsbook, the industry leader with exclusive bets, daily specials, odds boosts, and the most in-play betting options out there. And as always, remember, you get your $250 match bonus along with the fastest payouts and only one-time playthrough at BetRivers, your hometown sportsbook. Offer valid in Colorado, Illinois, Indiana, Virginia, Michigan, and Pennsylvania. Available at PlaySugarHouse.com in New Jersey. Must be 21. Gambling problem. Illinois, New Jersey, Pennsylvania. Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Indiana, 1-800-9-WITH-IT. Colorado, 1-800-522-4700. Michigan, 1-800-270-7117. Virginia, 1-888-532-3500. Offer not valid in Iowa. Back at it here as we're wrapping up a Friday edition of Rush Hour on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. I'm Danny Burke, your host. We're live out of the BetRivers Sportsbook. Plenty of sports ongoing currently with the Masters. Well, looking forward to the Masters, of course, the rest of the weekend. But some NBA, hockey, and, of course, Major League Baseball. Let's touch on the diamond with our good pal Jeff Erickson at Jeff_Erickson is where you can follow him on Twitter and catch his great content over at RotoWire, where he does a great job covering baseball and just the overall senior editor. Jeff, let's get into it. Just some early MLB observations. You know, a week and a half or 2 weeks into the season, you know, you and I were talking off air about the NL Central specifically, but just a wide view of the league, anything that stuck out to you as of this point early on?
You know, strikeouts are way up across baseball. That's one thing that it caught my eye pretty early is, I know we have pitchers back hitting in the National League, but believe it or not, in the American League, strikeout rate is over 10 Ks per team per nine innings. It's higher than ever, and that's kind of caught my eye. Now, sometimes that is accentuated early on in the season, so that might change just a little bit there. You know, obviously the Reds are off to a great start, 5-1. The Phillies are off to a great start. A few other teams are struggling early on like that. But you know, one thing we're talking before about both the Cubs and the Reds have been able to feast off the Pirates so far, and you know, we'll see what happens with the Reds when they get out of their division for the first time. Now they're going to Arizona, which is actually a pretty nice landing spot, too. That's a team that's kind of down right now, too. So, you know, it could be a good opportunity to get a lead, which is something that the Reds haven't done the last 4 or 5 years.
Yeah, and let's get right into that game, Jeff, because I was talking about this earlier. I actually did play the Reds here at about minus 141. Market's been moving a bunch in their direction. Now they're minus 155, Arizona plus 132. Total we're seeing at 9.5. Now, again, look, I'm riding the wave here of this Reds offense, and I don't think it's going to be this consistent, obviously. That would be a statistical anomaly. But they have the firepower there to produce this pretty frequently, and no better opportunity to do it than against the Arizona Diamondbacks, who, on the same sort of agenda here offensively, they've been slacking to get out of the gate. And Widener had a good debut for himself. I don't see that necessarily replicating. How do you envision this matchup going down in the desert?
I almost think that the under might be in play here. 9.5 seems pretty high. And I know it's because the Reds have scored a ton of runs so far, but Widener did a really good job of attacking the Padres hitters in his first time out, threw a lot of strikes. And the Padres had been trying to make a concerted effort prior to that of trying to work the count a lot, try to get the deep in the count, get to the soft middle relief that the Diamondbacks have. Now, the Diamondbacks bullpen is really banged up right now. Joaquin Soria is on the IL. They had Chris Davinsky go on a personal leave. It's just not a strong bullpen right now. But I'm more concerned about the Diamondbacks lineup. Ketel Marte is out on the IL. That's a big loss. They don't have Cole Calhoun right now. He's going to be in about 3-4 more weeks before he returns. And that just really weakens this lineup. So I think I like the red side, but I also really like the under on this one.
Yeah, again, 9.5 is where you're seeing this total. The under -110, over -108. Would agree with you in terms of that total. Yeah, it seems like 9.5, maybe a half point there too high. And then again, I'm playing the Reds -141. -155 is where we're seeing them now, but you could get a little plus money if you want to lay the run line with Cincinnati on the road against the D-backs tonight. Another team on the road that could be a viable option here, Jeff, is the Padres taking on the Texas Rangers in San Diego. A big favorite here, -195. You want to lay the run and a half, you're still laying a price, -115. Total at 9, shaded briefly to the over. Joe Musgrove going up against Arihara. How does Texas fare in this match? I mean, obviously the expectations for the Rangers this whole season are nowhere near high, but in this specific matchup, could they be a live dog?
It's possible. The thing is, we're missing Fernando Tatis Jr. That's a big loss for the Padres. They do get Trent Grisham back today, batting leadoff for them. I mean, they've been without him, and I think that's actually it's going to be a big boost. You know, before when they had everybody else going, it was fine that they could handle one guy missing. But I think, it's this last couple of days, the Padres had a little bit of hard time scoring runs. Getting out of their own ballpark probably is good, too. Getting into Texas, the ball's been flying a little bit there. Nate Lowe has been the big story for the Rangers so far. Just cranking out the RBIs, a couple home run game against Tanner Roark the other day. He's been a fun start for them. The rest of this Rangers team is kind of sad. They've done a lot of trading away. They've had some mistakes in the draft. It's kind of tough. They're doing an interesting thing with two of their five rotation spots. They're doing tandem starters. Arihara is getting treated like a traditional starter, however. So that might keep them in the game a little bit longer. I think that's probably good because Texas has about five guys in their bullpen you haven't heard of. They've really had a lot of attrition, and they also kind of traded away a couple of their key arms this offseason. So, you look at them right now, and you want to get into that bullpen. You want to attack that. I think the back end of the bullpen's okay with Bush, and especially with Ian Kennedy. I think he's fine, but I still think there's some guys trying to find their way there. So if you get Arias' pitch count up, which the Padres are pretty good at doing, I like their chances of attacking the soft underbelly of their bullpen.
Speaking of guys trying to find their way, that's pretty much every single guy on the Oakland A's right now is the Athletics off to a brutal start to their season, Jeff. And it's quite the contrary for the Astros, who have just been absolutely on a tear offensively, 51 runs on 73 hits. The A's just 19 runs on 43 hits. Astros a big favorite here at home, -195. The A's catch it +163, total at 8.5. Astros beat the A's last night 6-2. As good as the Astros have been, Jeff, and I'm not saying I'm going to bet the A's, but it seems like it's only a matter of time before Oakland somewhat figures it out and that there's going to be value on them. Is that tonight, though, is the question.
Yeah, I don't think this is a great matchup. Manaea is a lefty, and he he's facing an Astros lineup that's loaded with really good right-handers. Correa, Altuve, Bregman. Look at that lineup there, Gurriel, Correa. I mean, that's five out of the top six hitters are all right-handed, Jordan Alvarez being the exception. But this is a deep lineup. They've been swinging the bat really well so far. That's always nice to get off to a good start. And the thing about the A's is often they start out poorly. And then you look at them and you kind of write them off. And then starting in June, maybe late May, they come around. They haven't started off this poorly. They didn't have a lead until the 46th inning of their season, which is just remarkable. And it lasted one inning. And that was against Clayton Kershaw, and then Kershaw shut them down the rest of the way. They finally got their first win a couple nights ago in the extra inning game, afternoon, I guess it would be out here, but in extra innings when Kenley Jansen blew the save. They've got so many things going wrong right now. Rosenthal just had surgery. They haven't had a save situation yet, so we still don't know who the closer is going to be. It's probably going to be Jake Diekman if they get that far. I'd probably do the square play and probably bet the Astros again, but I mean, you're paying for it. I mean, that's the tough part there. You know, maybe the smart play is just not bet at all.
That's probably what it is. Just stay away from this one or look for an in-game betting opportunity. And Jeff, right. Before we let you off here, really quick, I mean, we talked about teams that have been, you know, coming off to a hot start. How about the Phillies in the NL East? One of the most intriguing divisions that you and I have spent time discussing. And, you know, I bet the Nationals to make the playoffs for a little bit of plus money. We haven't seen too much action from them at this point. The Braves, you could get at plus 160 to win the division because the Mets are at the top now, which seems a little bit odd. But the Phillies have obviously been coming out firing. I mean, what do you expect from the NL East? I know it's extremely early, but what can you expect?
I'm a little surprised at the Phillies' price. You know, if plus 500, I mean, that's seems a little high. I would think that I'd like that side. I mean, the thing about the Phillies is their top three have been starting pitchers are pretty solid. You know, you go off Nola, Wheeler's tonight. Zach Eflin's a guy I really like. They improved their bullpen too. Going and getting Jose Alvarado is a fun guy to watch. Throws almost 100 as a lefty, and that's hard to find. You know, they really made an emphasis on finding velocity for their bullpen. They threw the fewest 95 mile an hour fastballs in baseball from their bullpen last year, by a pretty wide margin too. And that was one thing they tried to make a point of, is just trying to add more velocity, add more ability to strike out, because they really had a lot of leads blown late. I think that's one thing they're working on trying to prevent this year.
Jeff Erickson, ladies and gentlemen, you can follow him at Jeff_Erickson. Catch him over at RotoWire as a senior editor. And Jeff, we appreciate you taking some time this Friday evening. Enjoy the slate of games of baseball tonight and the weekend, and we'll catch you up soon.
Awesome. Thanks, Danny.
There he is, Jeff Erickson. Great work when it comes to Major League Baseball and good early observations. A lot of strikeouts, he said, even in the AL. So we'll continue on with more futures in Major League Baseball because we've been monitoring it with the NBA, of course, you know, seeing how those fluctuate throughout the course of the season. And that was really what was going to be a point that I was going to stress with that with the MLB, because I didn't play any season win totals, but I think there will be a good opportunity to look at those type of markets throughout the course of this season now that it's going to be back to the full length and not in the condensed season. So, of course, we'll keep an eye on that in the coming months and really just throughout the whole fun of the summer of Major League Baseball. But in terms of MLB, again, if you missed it earlier, we did have a play with the Cincinnati Reds, which we just discussed with Jeff. They've gone all the way up to minus 155. Fortunate enough to snag him at minus 141. So be sure to subscribe to VSiN. VSiN.com/subscribe. You get a hold of those best bets early on when I plug them into the best bets page. You can get a hold of some of those better numbers. It doesn't always end up that it's going to be the better number, but in this case, it's looking like it. So lean in with the Reds. Of course, you could play the run line there for a little bit of plus money if that's the other option you'd want to go. And aside from taking the Cincinnati Reds on the diamond in terms of basketball, we do have a game to look forward to with the hometown team here, the Chicago Bulls on the road against the Atlanta Hawks, and the Bulls catching 2.5 on the spread. But instead of playing with the spread, I went with Patrick Williams over 8.5 points. Got 16 the first go-around against Atlanta. He's gone over this mark the last 5 out of 6 games. Had a lot more opportunities created since the acquisition, since the post-trade deadline. So looking for Patrick Williams over 8.5 and the Reds on the money line. As always, best of luck if you tail. Thanks for tuning in to another edition of Rush Hour. Enjoy your weekend and the Masters. We'll catch up again on Monday right here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.